Hello and welcome to the IT News Podcast. I'm your host, Kate Webber. Today we'll be speaking with Heritage Bank CEO Peter Lock about the bank's pending merger with Adelaide-based People's Choice Credit Union and how it will navigate its new IT restructure as the two institutions transition into one core banking system platform. The merger with People's Choice was first proposed back in August last year. Just wondering how the merger has progressed since then.
It's gone really well, very, very smoothly, in fact. So we are at the stage now of waiting for feedback and approval from APRA, the regulator, as to their approval. So we've gone through the initial conversations and the announcement in August, then the due diligence post the DD. Both boards have announced that they wanted to progress, and then we've put the necessary documentation to the regulators. That's going to take a few months to get through. We've had the first feedback through last week, and we've responded to that. We're waiting on the next lot, but hopefully we'll be in a position to get a regulator feedback and hopefully approval in the next few weeks, and then once we've got that, moving to a member vote. And that member vote will be late November, probably around the 24th of November, something like that. That will go to member vote. We need to get 75% of our present and voting membership on both banks to be voting yes for that. And if that's the case, then the final hurdle is approval by the treasurer. And then we would be one merged entity somewhere in the beginning of 2023.
Wow. And just wondering, why merge to begin with? What are you expecting this will bring to the Australian financial landscape?
This is a really quite unique proposition because it's a merger of equals. So it's not an acquisition and it's not a big and a small. It's two organisations that are pretty well the same size. We're just over 12 billion and People's Choice are just over 11 billion. We have the same number of employees, about 900. We have operations in complementary states. So we don't have any cutover. We're big in southern Queensland, southeast Queensland, and they're coming into New South Wales, where People's Choice have got a good market share in South Australia and the Northern Territory and going into Victoria. So you put those together and we'll have 95 branches, we'll have 1,700 employees, we'll have 770,000 members, and we'll have a national scale that hasn't been able to be achieved by other mutuals. And in fact, this will create one of the largest mutual entities in the country. It will really recreate this concept of national mutuals, which haven't been around since the demutualisation of AMP, Colonial Mutual, National Mutual, for example, and they're 30 years gone from the landscape. So it is a unique opportunity to bring two very like-minded organisations together and to create a new entity. And that creates scale opportunities for us. The cultural aspects are very much aligned. So we know that we have members' interests at the heart. And we believe, Kate, that this gives us the ability to create something in the Australian financial landscape that hasn't been there before and does create the foundation of offering a true alternate to the major listed banks.
Yeah, and Peter, you just spoke about scale, and earlier when you spoke to us at IT News about this merger earlier in March, you also mentioned that Heritage Bank will begin integrating its core banking systems into People's Choice. And I was just wondering, as you mentioned with scale, how has the process of combining the two IT departments and this onboarding process been so far?
It's really the embryonic stages, Kate, because at the moment we haven't got approval. So we are two separate organisations and have to continue to operate as two separate organisations. But Heritage had made the decision to move off of its old legacy core banking system and move to a new core banking system. And we made that decision quite independent of the opportunity to merge and the opportunity to enter into conversations with People's Choice. 18 months earlier, we had started the decision around our core banking platform. We went out to market and looked at a whole raft of possibilities. and then had shortlisted that and had chosen, in the end, a preferred supplier, and that was independent of People's Choice. But it just so happens that Choice coincided with People's Choice, a banking provider. So we, through the process, determined that Fiserv was going to be the better core banking system for us. And that's the core banking system that People's Choice were operating on as well. So a happy coincidence, but it was an independent process. And obviously that makes it a lot easier, the merge a lot more attractive when we're moving toward a single platform. And we would be doing that regardless of whether the merge is successful or not. So we have made that decision that our core platform is no longer fit for purpose or fit for the bank that we want to become. And we needed to move to a platform that was going to enable us to accelerate our digital offerings.
You did mention that the transformation or the merging of the ITs between the two banks was obviously in its embryonic stages so far. Just wondering if you've had the chance to sit down with People's Choice and outline any potential plans for what might happen should the merger continue forward.
So, yes, we have, but we have to be very careful about that. We do need to be mindful of gun jumping rules under the ACCC and not sharing confidential information that would be seen to be competitively sensitive. But within having said that, we do have those conversations and we do have integration streams working between the two organisations at the moment in dealing with the practicalities of getting the bank operating as one bank day one. So if this merge does go ahead, then we become one bank. We have one license, one ADI, and we need to show the regulators that we can operate as one bank from the operative date. And to do that, we need to obviously deal with a whole raft of regulatory and prudential issues, as well as the practical IT issues of how we bring two banks together. Now, in practice, we're not going to obviously be able to flick switches on day one and move off our core banking system onto People's Choice banking system. That transition is going to take 3 or so years to do. And it would have taken that period of time to transition to a new core under our own steam as well. So we go from a transformation to a new core, which we would have been under Heritage, to a transition to People's Choice core. And we just work that those equations slightly differently to make that transition happen. So we've identified that. We've identified the different systems that operate between the two organisations. And we're at a stage now of really needing to choose which systems, apart from the core, will be the systems that we deem to be the best fit for the merged entity.
I imagine that will be quite a few discussions around that. Do you have any process for how you might choose which digital tools and systems will stay and which will be cut?
Yeah, so at this stage, that's quite in early stages of discussion as well. But we have to look at which ones that we believe are going to offer the best outcomes for the target markets that we're aiming for. So the merged entity is obviously looking to grow new members and attract new members. So we'll have 770,000 members, and we've got to be respectful of the existing members, but we've got to position the bank to be attractive to grow new members. So we want 770,000 to blossom into a million and then further. So to do that, we've got to have the types of products and the channels that will be attractive to new members, as well as being adaptive to our existing members. And then when we look at the systems that we currently operate and we look at the systems that we think we need to operate, both organisations will be in different states of maturity in terms of running those systems and programs or selecting those systems and programs. So the selection process will be really based on how far have we gone through each of those processes. There will be obviously some sunk costs in that, and we've got to determine what's best, which one's better for the combined entity going forward. We've got a fair idea about where that will be. It's not going to be an easy process. It's going to be one with a lot of discussion and a lot of analytics behind that, but we're pretty confident that we'll be able to. We're both in the same state of mind, Kate, that says one system and one set of processes. We're not looking at replicating many systems or keeping legacy systems on board. We're looking to streamline. We're looking to select the ones that are going to be the easiest and, in most cases, the ones that are off the shelf rather than customized.
And it seems like Heritage Bank and People's Choice are very much on the same page with a lot of digital ambitions and goals, even ending up choosing the same core banking platform with your individual digital transformation goals. Was this part of the reason why Heritage Bank and People's Choice decided to merge together? Was that digital alignment part of that process to see that you guys really could make a brand new entity?
I think it's more cultural alignment and strategic alignment rather than digital alignment. The digital aspects are just a delivery mechanism for that. But we had to have a common view about a lot of things. First of all, we had to have a common view about mutuality, that we believed that the model that we run versus the model of the listeds, where they're driven by shareholder outcomes and shareholder value and profitability, we're driven by member benefit, community benefit. And so we needed to be aligned on that. Then we needed to be aligned on where we saw the market heading. And we both have a very clear view, as I said earlier, that the members that we're aiming for, the new members that will drive the bank going forward, have a different set of demands and requirements than our existing members. And we need to be able to pivot the bank, and that's a very difficult thing, toward being attractive for the new proposition while respectful of the existing proposition. And both banks were aligned on that type of thinking. So we do have very common culture and very common values which drive that. So that was the first point. And then seeing the target for millennials and seeing the fact that the digital transformation of banking is coming faster than many people have anticipated, scale will give us the ability to address that demand. And individually, that's a little bit of a struggle. Collectively, we think we can do it better.
And the new members you're hoping to attract, is this part of the like younger demographic, the millennials, the Gen X, that are obviously very mobile first, digitally focused?
Yes. Yeah, most definitely. But the big thing there is the respect of our existing 770,000. But they're the people that created the bank. But you've got to then look at the next generation. So a nice analogy of this is like private school systems or school. They've got they are mutuals in their aspect, and people are creating those legacies for future generations. But they're not teaching the same syllabus that they did 40 years ago, 50 years ago, 60 years ago. They have to change and be far more STEM orientated or digital orientated, or changing and teaching things that weren't in the curriculum only a few years ago. It's the same as banks. We can't live in the past and have outdated means and expensive means of delivering those services. We've got to be able to be agile, invest in new technology, and that's expensive. And to do that and to keep that up as the demands of our members keep on changing is a challenge that all of us are facing into. And again, we think that the merger and the scale that's achieved through the merger will enable us to achieve those outcomes.
Yeah, and I suppose, as you said, the long-term members, there's no reason that they'll be left behind. Digital-first stuff might seem a bit out there at first to a lot of people, but I think once they see how great, convenient, and fast it is, I'm sure they'll be all for it, especially with the pandemic accelerating a lot of digital-first things, almost forcing people to have to jump online to do banking. They couldn't go into a branch. So I can imagine once this all kind of starts coming into fruition.
And they're really good points, and that's exactly what we did see. We've got great stories about people in their 90s, you know, making their first BPAY electronically. Now, that seems very old hat, but it's quite daunting for people that aren't used to technology. And unfortunately, technology is moving faster than a lot of people can keep up with. You just know in going to sporting events now, they're not ticketed. They're all electronic. The move toward a lot of the digital interface, unfortunately, leaves a lot of our population behind. And that creates vulnerability. And when you've got vulnerable customers and forcing them onto digital platforms actually creates an opportunity for scammers to unfortunately take advantage of people that aren't as sure about some of the protocols that go on in the digital space. So we've got a duty there to make sure that we are educating and protecting our vulnerable customers. And this comes down to some of the aspects of a branch network as well, which is still a little unusual. And we will have 95 branches in the merged entity. But we can start to see of those 95 branches as protective assets, protective channels where people can go and get advice, can go and get assurance that what they're doing is correct and that their money and their welfare is being protected. And that's, I think, a very big part of our duties of ESG and how we demonstrate those credentials. So the concept of everything digital, I think, has positives, but it definitely has downsides. And we've got to make sure that we don't leave a big portion of our membership behind as we push that journey.
And is Heritage Bank doing anything at the moment in terms of looking for helping people what to look out for in terms of scams, helping them be educated and moving forward in this new digital world?
Yeah, we are. In fact, we've just released our latest newsletter on that as to what to look out for with scams. But again, there is a little bit of a catch-22 here because you tend to be trying to educate people digitally and a lot of these people aren't on digital means of communication. We need to be smarter about how we do that, and we're just starting to think a little bit more about that now and about positioning vulnerability in that ESG concept that I spoke about rather than just taking a more traditional approach of ESG, thinking it's about environment and climate, rather than, well, it's about far more holistic about that. It's about protecting people.
And just heading back to the merger, I'm just wondering, as you guys merge and move forward, how will both banks assist each other with digital goals? For example, I did hear Heritage will give People's Choice a bit of a leg up with its home origination platform. I was just wondering how you'll both equally benefit from this merge.
As I said, Kate, the beauty of this, quite scary actually, that it is a merge of equals. The cultures are very similar. You could go walk in, and we have obviously been touring People's Choice, and People's Choice have been touring Heritage, that you could change the badge to say Heritage or People's Choice in either one of those locations, and it would look and feel the same. And the strategy would look and feel the same. And the complementary nature extends to where we are on that digital journey. As I said earlier, there are some aspects where People's Choice are well advanced and Heritage is a little behind, and vice versa. And they are complementary. We're not overlapping. So a good example of that is product origination and where we are on those journeys. And again, that is one of those decisions that has to be made, that both systems that we're operating are good, but we need to choose one system. And those choices have to be made. And that's not just in product origination, that comes down to the digital interfaces, that comes down to our CRM system, our PRM system. So CRM is our credit risk management system, our fraud protection systems, our credit frameworks, our customer relationship systems as well. We make those choices, and our telephony systems as well, and how that, what's best, because we only want one system. And that's where the bank is operating. And that's where the synergies come from in the merge. We will move to one single operating system, one set of procedures, and one platform. And we'll create one bank out of that. Now, that will take a few years, as I've said, but the synergies that come out of that are where the benefits of the merger are founded.
Yeah, and just on the flip side, People's Choice, they're already a little bit ahead with their own digital transformation, moving on to their new core banking platform. Just wondering, will this be benefit when you guys merge, or will it be tricky to fit the Heritage Bank platform into a new platform that's already further progressed in its own digital transformation? Will you have to backpedal a little bit, or will you be able to like just slip in and continue forward?
We think we're actually going to leapfrog this, so it's a huge benefit for us. The upgrade that they're going through, People's Choice are going through at the moment, is the platform that we would have chosen. So they'll complete that upgrade, And then we jump into that. It makes it sound very easy, and I know it's not, but that's a leapfrog that we would have made anyway. So we believe that it will enable the new merged entity to have a really contemporary banking platform and ancillary systems that enable us to continue to deliver the digital transformation that the banks, all banks require. So we're confident that we'll be up the front of the pack now, not lagging behind it, and being able with that scale to continue the investment that's going to be required to stay at the front. Now, we don't want to be leading. We don't want to be the one that's using the Tour de France out in front of the peloton. We want to be in the peloton, but at the front of the peloton.
And we spoke a bit earlier about the digital tools and systems that might come and go with the merger. But I was just wondering, more as an internal organisation, how are the two banks currently outlining the new IT and company organisational structure? Obviously, there'll only be a need for one CIO, one IT digital department. Just wondering how you guys might merge that.
Yeah, look, it's one of the challenges of any merge is the governance structures of that. So we sorted those things out very early on in the merge, and we've made those announcements. That's in the public domain. So we've put both boards together, for example, and we've named our chairman as Michael Cameron. And our deputy chairman, Kerry Beatross. So Kerry Beatross will be the deputy chair. He's the current chair of Heritage. He'll be the deputy chair. Michael Cameron is the current chair of People's Choice. He'll be the chairman. The executive structure, I'll be the CEO, and Steve Laidlaw will be the deputy CEO. And then we have an executive structure that's already been named. Those executives, including the chief information officer. Now, the chief information officer position, we are currently in market for. So we have a CIO. Heritage has a CIO. People's Choice didn't have a CIO at the moment of the merge. They have moved to recruit an interim CIO that's currently in position, but we're in the market for the group CIO for the merged entity, and that recruitment is currently taking place.
And do you have a timeline of when you hope to appoint that person, or is that dependent on final approvals of the merge?
No, not. It's a good point. That will probably take place at or around the same time, I think. So in the market, recruiting for that at the moment. We're hopeful that we will have final approval in the next little while. So I think the two will just coincide nicely with that. The People's Choice CIO position is acting at the moment, so they need to have a permanent CIO regardless. So there is a fallback position there. But we are confident that the merge will be approved by the regulators. Obviously, we are very hopeful that members will see the advantages and the benefits that have been identified by the directors. And remember, the directors of both organisations are recommending this based on the fact that it does produce significant member benefit, and their fiduciary duties are aligned to that, and therefore they are recommending that the merge proceed. So we're confident, but we're not complacent.
And I believe you mentioned that you expect the merge to be officially finalised 2023. Just wondering if you had a name for what the new bank will be called?
No, we don't at the moment, and there's a reason for that. Everybody's a marketer, and if we had a name, then we're pretty sure people will vote on the name, whether they like the name or not, whether they like the merger or not. So we are starting that process. We are starting to engage with brand agency and getting submissions from those, but it's very early days, and we don't anticipate that we would have a new brand until probably halfway through 2023. Once or if the merger gets a nod, then we anticipate that we would be operating under the two brands for a little while before we introduce the new brand. And to do that, it's not the intention to run Heritage brands and People's Choice brands separately for any longer than we need to do. But we do need an IT bridge between the two systems so that our members would be able to hopefully bank in either brand and get a seamless experience. So that's one of the first things that we've got to look at, how we do that whilst we build up this transition to a single brand. It's a big piece of
Yeah, and would that IT bridge be more temporary?
I think so. But the guys and girls in the IT departments, they haven't really put their mind to that yet. There's one of those things we need to do once we realise that this thing is happening, and then how long that bridge takes to build. And I'd hate to put words in their mouth or ideas in their heads about something that may or may not be possible.
But either way, I guess customers at People's Choice and Heritage shouldn't feel any disruption in their service?
No, the individual customers won't at all. It's just whether they can come in and start doing transactions under the signage of the other bank. But all normal banking services from both brands will continue as normal. The acknowledgement to the opportunity to talk a little bit more about what is a very exciting prospect for not only for us, but for the market. And this does create the changing landscape that hasn't been around, as I said, for 30 plus years, and the creation of a new national mutual that will create this alternative to the majors. But in doing so, it creates an enormous opportunity because we are going to have the scale to be able to do things that we haven't had before. These are big IT programs, and that creates a lot of opportunity and a lot of excitement, a lot of career opportunities as well. So we will be looking for people in this. We will be looking for people that want to be able to be a part of something that's new and create something that's going to make a lasting change for Australia.
I do hear a lot of banks and companies do have that struggle of finding IT talent. So I imagine that's going to be next on your radar as well, like searching and hunting for that talent at this new bank.
It definitely is. So if people are listening and are interested, we'd love to hear from you.
That was Heritage Bank CEO Peter Lock. And that's the podcast for this week. We'll be back next week with another great interview. Until then, keep up to date with the latest in Australian tech news by checking out itnews.com.au.